Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. And Happy New Year. Happy 2018. You can believe it. We're racing through the first 20 years of the 21st century here. I'm Tim Wildman. Walker Wildman is with me. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Sweater clad today.
Sweater clad.
Yes.
And
there's a reason.
You could be wearing more than a sweater, but we are inside, thank the Lord. And Dr. Ray Pritchard is co-hosting with us on this Tuesday. And good morning, Ray. How are you from Dallas?
Well, hey, doing great. It's chilly, but Happy New Year.
What's chilly, Ray?
You know, it's, 21 degrees or so, but it was down in the single digits here, which is pretty unusual for Dallas. So we're slightly warmer this morning, a little bit.
Well, I'm going to refresh my Weather Channel outlook here in Tupelo, Mississippi. Right now it's 18 degrees. But it is sunny. It's 18 degrees. So I think what we have here is in the book of Revelation.
It's a sign.
Right.
It's a sign.
I think you can find it in there somewhere this is heading toward our
first time I've heard that.
Well,
but hey, first time for everything.
You tell me. I mean, my word. All across the, well, probably 60-70% of the country, right? Isn't that right? It's covered up by this deep freeze.
Well, from the Pacific Northwest through the Plain States, through Chicago, through New England, and down into what?
The deep south.
Yeah. It's cold everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it's frigid.
They're talking freezing rain in northern Florida today.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about. This is Revelation stuff right here. You tell me. All right, Walker, what are we going to be doing on our Today's Issues Facebook page?
We're live streaming there. You can watch the show, and you can comment.
Assuming your computer doesn't freeze up.
Yeah, keep your computer warm.
I've been holding that one.
By running it. And all the news stories will be posted on our Today's Issues page.
So you can watch the show there, too?
That's right.
If you want to watch the show, you can go to our Today's Issues live feed on Facebook. And we have a lot of people, several thousand, who check in with us there, mm-hmm. don't we? Fred Jackson, Fred, good morning.
Go ahead. Good morning.
Get us started.
Leading the news this morning, an all points bulletin has gone out for Al Gore. Nobody can find him. Comment.
And you've been waiting to use that one, too.
That's right.
Can't find him.
Missing in action. Maybe he's frozen somewhere.
No, he's in Costa Rica somewhere at some resort. He's trying to find
it. Now, you did see President Trump's tweet on this the other day, didn't you? He couldn't help himself.
On the cold weather? Or did he say something?
Well, President Trump's, he's good about self-control. And the other day, he tweeted, hey, talking about the deep freeze that the country was about to go into. This is 4 or 5 days ago. He said, hey, we sure could use some of that global warming right now.
That's right.
There's a lot of people saying that. There's a lot of folks out there. I mean, this morning I was coming in listening to our 6 o'clock newscast, and the reporter was talking about in northern Montana with the wind chill, -60, -60.
Yeah, I'm calling in sick. I'm not going in if that's the case.
That's moments away from frostbite.
Yeah.
It really is. It's
dangerous. Extremely
it is
dangerous.
Extremely dangerous.
Let me ask you this, but I was reading over the weekend, Ray, about obviously when weather like this happens, it's easy for us to mock global warming. It's so right. fun to do too as well. we can't resist. But the climate changers, they're no longer the global warming folks.
They had to change
people who
the name.
blame carbon emissions and they call it man-made global warming or man-made climate change. Of course, they switched to the phrase climate change to get away from global warming because Everything's climate change.
Right. The climate is always changing, right?
So therefore, we win every day. You know, if you're from their side, you know, blaming a man for this. But seriously, they were saying, well, the reason we're having the deep freeze in the Canada and the continental U.S. was because of the global warming at the Arctic. In the Arctic, basically, is what they were saying. It's not so cold up there because all the cold air has been pushed down. It was just sound like to me it was language gymnastics there.
Now we're just making stuff up.
Yeah,
right?
making that's what I'm trying to say. Just sort of making stuff up here. But you know, it'll be hot next summer.
Right.
It'll be cold in the winter.
Yep.
And we've had these spells. That's just nature.
Yeah.
So anyway, what else you got on the
weather front? I do have to mention, for some people, it's so what. The bitter cold wave enveloped much of the Midwest on Monday. Yet that didn't deter hundreds of people from ringing in the new year by jumping into Lake Michigan.
I thought it was frozen. It is frozen in some parts.
Yeah, they probably sawed a hole in the ice. But you see this every year. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing to me. Number one, why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know, get your hot chocolate and enjoy a fire at the lake.
I think you're drinking.
Yeah, they're drinking something more than hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Antifreeze,
yeah,
right?
I agree with Ray there.
Oh, I just.
You ever heard the expression liquored up?
That's right.
We got going on right there.
But jumping into Lake Michigan, good luck on that.
The 911 said don't call us, didn't they, basically?
Well, the fire chief up there said basically don't do this because hypothermia,
right,
just like that.
Yeah.
Right.
But some people are going to do that. It doesn't matter. It's New Year's Day. We're going to go plunge in the water.
Mm-hmm.
hardy folks, I guess we can give them that compliment. Well, in other news, you may have seen stories about this over the New Year's Day weekend, and this is the ongoing protests now in Iran. We've got people in the streets. We haven't seen that in a number of years, but we've got people in the streets in Iran protesting because guess what? The economy there is failing. I guess they're putting all their money into their weapons that they're using to attack other nations. But also the people are saying they've had enough, and they're out in the streets, and they're getting lots of encouragement, like Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel says, we stand behind those people that are out there protesting against Khomeini, and also President Trump tweeting out there his support for the protesters.
Yeah.
And also there's a report this morning, at least some people, I think Senator Lindsey Graham is one of them. They're saying that these protests are really the result of President Barack Obama not doing enough to pressure the Iranian regime because he was courting them to get this nuclear deal when he was in office. And so he basically knew there was discontent, President Obama did, in the ranks of the people of Iran, but did nothing because he wanted to curry favor with the regime. So he did nothing. He basically... who cares what these people think, that they're suffering under this Ayatollah Khomeini, and we're not going to do anything about it because you wanted to sign this deal with the Iranians?
Well, I don't know if I blame President Obama for Iran's problems. I think it's a religious problem more than anything
That's
else.
That's part of it.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question.
He
didn't do anything to help.
It is true that President Obama did nothing to help those who were trying to overturn the Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, Ray, correct me if I'm wrong here, you have what's called the mullahs, which are the Islamic religious leaders in Iran. They have a theocracy. They have a true theocracy. So they impose Sharia law on the Iranian people, true?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's completely different from what we have in the U.S., basically a secular democracy, founded on Christian principles, but it's not the same here in the U.S. In Iran, they are self-proclaimed an Islamic republic. Mm-hmm. So the mullahs have not just spiritual power, but enormous political influence because the people over there are living, no matter who they are, they're living under Sharia law of the Islamic religion. And you've seen some of the protesters have gone so far as not just to say overthrow the government, but they are saying down with the Islamic Republic.
Well,
it takes a lot of courage to do that because there are people being shot in the streets over there.
Mm-hmm. So now a lot of Iranians, they know or have experienced life in either America or Western countries. And so this is where I think the tension is coming from. This is where the uprising is coming from. And I don't know how big the uprising is. I guess it'll be crushed pretty soon because the mullahs have control of the army. And they can. So the person who has the gun usually wins against the person who doesn't in the end. But we'll see. I don't know how big this uprising is because you see these news reports on it, but you don't know how big it is. But here's the deal is that you remember you had the Shah of Iran, for those who are old enough to remember back in the 70s. That's what started the whole crisis with the hostage. The Ayatollahs threw out the Shah. The Shah was basically an American-friendly, you want to call him a puppet? I don't know what you want to call him. But he basically instituted a more open society. Mm-hmm. Well, the mullahs overthrew. That's when the Ayatollah Khomeini came in, overthrew the Shah, and reverted to an Islamic theocracy in Iran. So you have a lot of people who. I remember a friend of mine telling me he flew to Tehran. Is that how you pronounce it?
That's right.
Tehran. Mm-hmm. He flew to Tehran. This is 8-10 years ago. And, you know, you had to get special permission to visit Iran. Some Americans do. But he said they were flying from somewhere in maybe Frankfurt to Tehran. And as the plane began to descend to land in Iran, all the women got out their hijabs that they weren't wearing when they were in Germany or in the U.S., but they had to go home to visit their family or friends in Iran. They had to put all the conservative robes and everything back on. It was, he said it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so they impose a strict religious law in Iran. And so now you have people who are tired of it. But again, I don't think they'll succeed.
Yeah.
I wish they would.
Yeah. This is, it's not like America, like you just explained, but, I don't know if this is what we want, because Iran's bad. Their leaders are bad. They're building nuclear bombs. But I don't know if we want to be in the wild, wild west like you have in Syria and Iraq and these in Libya.
In Libya,
I don't know. There's no good. There's nothing good going on right now.
These people yearn for freedom, though.
I know, they do.
And they're tired of the oppression of the religious leaders there in Iran, so they're reacting here again.
Right. I hope that if they do overtake the regime, there can be some sense of order brought to the country without the wild, wild west jihadis overtaking the place.
Yeah, because you do have nuclear
weapons
and things being...
You know, Tim, you made a good point about... Whoever controls the army is going to win that fight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the man with the guns is going to rule at the end of the day. I think back to the fall of the Soviet Union, there was a lot of things that happened after the collapse of the fall of the Berlin Wall and so on. It took a couple years after that, but in the end, the reason the USSR came apart is because the Russian army ultimately decided they did not want to follow their communist overlords anymore. They wouldn't obey orders, and that's why the government fell. If the Iranian army decides to back Khomeini, I don't think there's any way the regime changes.
Right.
If at least, you know, sometimes it could be part of the army. If part of the army says, no, we want a change, then you could have, Walker, it's kind of what
civil
you're saying.
War.
Then it could have civil war in Iran.
Syria. And,
right.
Syria.
You could have Syria all over again.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. But I think the situation in Iran is more like Tiananmen Square.
Yeah.
You have a group of people that are trying desperately to change a horrific situation, but as Ray talks about, whoever the military falls with.
Yeah.
And
you know, this proves that that democracy really cannot exist without Christianity as its foundation, because there's no law and order. So let's just say, hypothetically, they take over their regime. Who's going to take over? More Islamists. More Islamists. And eventually you'll have more rulers. You know, what I'm saying is, the people of Iran, who are mostly Muslims, they're not going to take over the regime and set up a representative democracy.
No.
No. It'll eventually be another king, another ruler, another Ayatollah. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. What beyond speaking out can America do? I appreciate President Trump's tweets and Nikki Haley has spoken out and others, but clearly we don't want to put boots on the ground in Iran, right? We're not about to send the 82nd Airborne over there or something like that. Beyond what we've done, is there anything else the U.S. can do?
Well, make sure we're not part of any ongoing this nuclear deal with Iran. Make sure we're not doing anything else to facilitate the Ayatollah Khomeini regime. Yep. Stop that immediately. We have to signal to the world we're not friends with Iran. Iran is the enemy. They want to wipe Israel, every Jewish person, off the face of the earth. That in itself is enough to say we want no part. We're not going to help. But also, I mean, Iran has been known, Iranian warships have been known to threaten our vessels in the Red Sea. And so we ought not to put up with that nonsense. We have to be strong against them. But
I would have to do some more reading on this. But I do know there is as I said earlier, there is a significant percentage of Iranians who are aware of life in the outside.
Yes.
They are aware of Western values, if you will. Walker, they may understand to your point where they come from.
Right.
But they sure don't like the theoretic religious oppression of the living that they find themselves living under in Iran. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know, Trey, to your point, what more we can do, besides encourage these people morally, to react against, the Ayatollah Khomeini. But, unless you change the religion there, you're not going to fundamentally change anything.
Yeah, and let me say this.
And you're not going to change your religion.
My outlook was very pessimistic.
It was.
It was a realist outlook, because you look at past regime changes, they don't go very well. But I will say that the best situation you can have for regime change is when the people rise up, rather than a foreign government coming in like the U.S. and trying to change a country.
You can move the government of a nation. Like, we are friends, for the most part, with Jordan. We are friends with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Countries like those are Muslim countries, but they're moderate. And what we can hope for is that what's going on there right now, and at least 20 people have lost their lives with this, 450 people arrested over the weekend. So this is serious. But at least maybe we can move the dial to the to a more centrist type government. But I mentioned Red Sea. I meant Persian Gulf there. Our ships have been, the low flybys, all this sort of stuff. We don't have to put up with that nonsense.
Yeah.
And we need to take a strong stand when that happens, instead of just sitting back, which has been the case in the past.
Well,
one thing I'd like to do is I'd like to see the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the major networks. I'd like to see them cover this a whole lot more closely, because one thing we can do is shine the light on the revolutionary ferment inside the country, and show how the ordinary people of Iran, they hate the government they're under. They want economic freedom. They want personal freedom. Fox News has done a good job. The internet's done a good job. It would be great if the mainstream media would come along.
Yep. Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Sandy Rios will be with us a little bit later on in the hour. We look forward to talking to Sandy. Fred, what's the next story?
Well, also, the president has been busy. He let Pakistan know where he stands with Pakistan right now. The United States a little fed up that Pakistan has not done enough to curtail the presence of terrorists in that country. And the president wanted them to know President Trump yesterday slammed Pakistan for what he called lies and deceit, saying the country had played U.S. leaders for fools by not doing enough to control terrorists in that country. So, and my understanding is that we're going to cut back on aid to Pakistan. So, this is a different president. This is a 180-degree turn from President Barack Obama in our foreign policy with these countries. And this president, you know, like he's done with Israel, going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. It's like Nikki Haley, our ambassador to the United Nations. Doesn't matter what the rest of the United Nations says, we're going to stand by our support for Israel. This is a totally different administration, one that we have not seen. We didn't see it under George W. Bush. We didn't see it under Barack Obama. This is a very different administration. President Trump is one who's not afraid to say what's on his mind.
So he has the authority to cut off funding?
Mm-hmm.
That's within the reach of the that a UN or executive branch money, a foreign aid of some kind?
That's within his purview.
Okay.
Purview that he can do that kind of thing.
Do you know anything about that, Ray?
Well, and Fred, this does answer the question, was the president going to cut back on his tweeting in the new year? I believe I believe this Pakistan comment was the very first tweet he put out in 2018.
Yeah.
It's sort of a shot across the bow. And I think it's just about time and past time for us to – why are we giving hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars to Pakistan when we know they are hiding terrorists in the western part of their country up against Afghanistan, and they've been doing it for years? It's high time for us to call them to account and say, well, you're not going to get any more money until you change the way you're doing things.
Yeah, many people don't know this, and if you've studied the Osama bin Laden raid, you know it. But our troops, what happens, as Ray alluded to, is our troops will chase terrorists, and we almost got Osama bin Laden years ago until he escaped to Pakistan mountains.
Mm-hmm.
But the terrorists know that the U.S. troops cannot go into Pakistan. So on the mountain ranges there on the border, they'll flee to Pakistan, and they can't go anywhere. And it's a safe haven, and it's been that way for years, probably since the Afghan War.
Mm-hmm.
But it's way past due time for the president to do something.
Okay. So we're cutting back. How much money are you talking about?
$250 million.
Okay.
In military aid.
Okay, to Pakistan. All right, that's interesting. We the United States government give a lot of money away around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do that, and this is going to sound crass, but we do that to buy people off. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's
it's a fact.
It's a fact. And it works to a large extent. It works. You may say, well, that's unprincipled. Well, that's just the way of the world, folks. And the reason we have such influence in Egypt, for example, is because we give them a lot of money that they use for their military. And so we tell them, though, hands off with Israel. And so they keep peace with Israel is because we have bought off the, again, that sounds terrible, the Egyptian government.
Doing it. The other side, you know, countries have been using foreign aid for centuries as a way of gaining control around the world.
Yeah. Right.
It's just now our President Trump and Nikki Haley are saying, we want some accountability back.
That's
boy,
right.
Boy,
that's
it's
right.
time for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to be take a break right here. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Happy New Year, everybody. And let me personally thank the University of Oklahoma and the University of Georgia football teams for a fantastic game yesterday. It's a shame either one of them had to lose. Ray, did you watch that game?
A blocked field goal in overtime. Unbelievable.
Yeah. What a great college football game that was yesterday between Georgia and Oklahoma. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our spiritual heritage tours fill up each year several months in advance, and we've got the dates now for our 2018 trips. There are two tours. There's one to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, and then there's a separate trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, where we'll explore early American history. Now, if you want information on these tours, simply go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information. Again, in June and September, you can go on one or you can go on both. They're back to back. We plan them that way. Again, June and September, Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com, and I hope to see you on one of our spiritual heritage tours.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study, from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. That game last night between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Oklahoma Sooners may have been the granddaddy of them all when it comes to Rose Bowl championships. The Bulldogs pulling out all the stops to take down Heisman winner Baker Mayfield in overtime, 54-48. It was a football game for the ages and for the history books. Here's how the final play sounded on the radio, called by Scott Howard of the Georgia Bulldogs radio network.
Nauta goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling. 25-20. Got a block for Frog. 50. 10. 5. Touchdown. 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 Dogs win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Maybe it's just me, but football games always sound better on the radio. The Bulldogs head back to Georgia, where they will face Southeastern Conference rival Alabama next Monday in the College Football Championship. Go Dogs. Roll Tide. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Today's Issues, the name of the program. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson, and also Dr. Ray Pritchard joins us from Dallas. Ray hosts the program on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Todd Starnes there was talking about the game between Oklahoma and Georgia. I know Alabama, you know, and Clemson played last night, but that wasn't as dramatic a game. Did you watch that Georgia-Oklahoma game, Ray?
You know, that was one of the most exciting football games I have ever seen. I mean, back and forth, back and forth. And I thought at halftime, Georgia had it. I mean, until the second half. And then, I thought Oklahoma had it at halftime, right? And then all of a sudden, Georgia comes roaring back. And then Oklahoma comes back. And you go into overtime. What are the chances of a blocked field goal in overtime? Does that ever happen?
But two overtimes.
It's unbelievable.
It was the second overtime. But it's one of those, you know, the old cliche, you hate anybody had to lose. But that certainly applied to that game. And now Georgia moves on and will play Alabama in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. The new stadium.
Yeah. Right. So who do you like in the game next Monday night?
I know the rest of the country hates the SEC because here we go again.
Here we go.
SEC is going to win the national championship one way or another, and that's inevitable now, isn't it?
That's right.
I think that's a pick 'em game right there, don't you?
It's going to be a great game.
Well, we're Alabama. I'm sorry. Our son-in-law is a Tuscaloosa boy, so.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So you're going to be pulling for
Alabama.
You know, I'm proud of Georgia. They've been kind of teetering on the edge of championship, and they would go to Atlanta a couple of times. And so it's good to see them make it, you know.
It'll be a great game.
Yeah.
Well, I was surprised at how – easily is not the right word, but how dominant Alabama was last night against Clemson. I mean, Clemson's not a bad team. You can't be a bad team and get in the playoff. They're a good team, and Alabama just – that was a beat.
It's their defense. Yeah, I kept watching their defense, expecting the Clemson quarterback to kind of break loose.
Right.
And they were just
bottled in.
They looked like an NFL defense, how fast they were.
Can Georgia run against Alabama the way they did against Oklahoma? I mean, that's the question of the game, right?
We're going to find out.
Yep.
Wonder what those tickets will go for. Because it's in Atlanta, and the schools are so close to one another.
Uh-huh.
You know that'll up the price of the tickets.
And the big news is that because it's a Monday night game, Chick-fil-A will be open in the stadium.
Oh, that's right.
That's true. That's true. Well, anyway, congratulations to you know, I tell my friends, I say one expression that you'll never hear in life is this: do you think Alabama has a chance? am I right?
That's not
right.
As long as Nick Saban is the coach, you will never hear that ever.
You'll never hear that expression in your life. Do you think Alabama has a chance? Says nobody in the world.
Right.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, and if anybody knows Alabama, it's Kirby Smart, right?
Because true.
I mean, he knows the ins and outs of the Alabama system. So
that's true.
It's going to be a good game.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We wish that was all in the world we had to concern ourselves with is college football. Be a great planet to live on, but so much more going on of a much more obviously serious nature. Joining us to talk about some of this is Sandy Rios. Sandy's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio, heard 7:05 Central Time each Monday through Friday. She's also Director of Governmental Affairs for us here at American Family Association. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim. And you have to know, when I was on the air in Chicago, drive time for however many years it was, I always said the two things I cannot talk about are sports and dogs. So what would you like to tell me about your puppy? Because I'm game to listen. Tell me about your dogs.
I'll tell you what you can talk about that will help me as a lifelong Southerner. You've been a good Midwestern girl, grew up in Illinois, lived in Chicago for many years. I got to know what's the thinking of the polar bears up there running into Lake Michigan.
They just make sure running into. Are you talking about the people?
I'm talking about the people who call themselves polar bears who run into Lake Michigan in Chicago.
They must be, you know, kin to the Vikings. I don't know. You know, the Norwegians, a lot of the people in those parts of the world do that, where they go in a hot tub and then go out, you know, in the cold air and then back and forth. I don't know. Very stimulating.
You know, I know that many folks in the that part of the country look at Southerners in a disparaging, sort of embarrassed way about it. And then we look up there and we go, well, we're not jumping in lakes when it's.
Who should be embarrassed here? I'm kind of with you, Tim. Good point.
I'm taking from this conversation that when Sandy lived in Chicago, she did not participate.
She didn't do that.
I didn't, but I always dressed warm. And you know, you guys do know that I sang the national anthem for the Chicago Bears during their Super Bowl years.
Yes.
I did know that.
That's my claim to football fame.
Two or three times. I mean,
Three times she sang the national anthem.
That's got to be on YouTube somewhere.
It isn't actually, because I don't know why. There was a movie producer who I got to know, and I don't know how he found this out about me, but he went on a search for it. He couldn't find it. I think part of the reason is because, you know, you have to understand, and I know you do, that they don't, the dollars for the commercials are, they do not play the national anthem for the most part.
Right.
They don't televise it because they like to, they can run commercials and make tons of money. Now, there was one year when it was, I was supposed to sing the anthem and the weather was bad. I know you can't imagine that.
In Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, so it was rainy and the field was covered with tarp And so when it came, I went out for the sound check and everything was fine on the tarp. But then when it came time for the actual game to start, you know, you have to imagine you go 60,000 people and you know, I have to walk through these players who are, by the way, huge when you're right next to them. So I walk through the players, then I have to walk to the center of the field, 50-yard line, and then you're a long way from everybody. Right. And there's like one microphone. Well, this particular year, the mic wouldn't work. I'm singing.
Oh, my
word.
And
nobody can hear me but me. And so I'm sitting and like, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
Who's supposed to tell me? There's nobody around. So I stand there politely. And finally, it's all unionized. So some guy comes hobbling out with his keys jangling, you know, some Chicago dude, and he taps on the mic and he tries to make it work. And it seemed like it was forever. And meanwhile, the players are all standing at attention. They did that in those days. And then they have to escort me all the way down the field to the end zone by the band to use their microphone. And that's the one year I was televised singing.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word.
I had people calling me. I saw you sing the national. And I thought, it was funny because it was delayed. Yeah, there you go. So.
Now, would they play are you singing it a cappella?
You sing it a cappella.
Okay.
And I tell you what, it's very, very difficult. Because there's like, I believe it was a 3.5-second delay. And your voice that you hear as you're singing is much larger,
yes,
bigger, huge than the voice that you're hearing as you sing. So I'm singing, oh, say, you know, and it's completely out of rhythm. So if you're going to, you just got to ignore the huge voice coming back to you at a different pace in a different world 4 seconds later and just concentrate on singing with your mind. You can't really hear. And so I'm telling you, it's very challenging to sing the national anthem a cappella.
But obviously you did okay because you got back to you got asked again and again.
Oh, this is funny too. 1 year. Is this interesting? Because I can talk
ahead
about politics.
No, go ahead.
I think it was the second year I did it. I used to sit up in the press box. So this Newsweek, I think it was Newsweek, the sports editor for some big pay, it might have been Sports Illustrated, I don't know. He said, listen, you sang the anthem so fast last year. If you just trim it down by a second, you'd have the world record. What do you think? And so I want to be known for singing the national anthem faster than anybody ever sang it. You know? So I didn't take him up on that. But the other funny story is 1 year, this is so long. This is probably the first time I sang. I hate to tell this story because it sort of misrepresents my personal circumstances, but I was at a furrier buying a fur. Now, to put this all in perspective, it is very cold in Chicago, and I bought the cheapest fur they had. It was opossum. So I just want you to know this is the context. Ray, you remember York Furriers.
It was, absolutely.
They used to advertise all the time. So I was at York Furriers, and my husband was bragging that the next day I was going to sing at the Chicago Bears game. And the salespeople just were apoplectic. You're going to sing. Of all the things I've ever done, that's the thing that somehow has greater prestige. And so the sales guy said, just a minute. So he leaves and he comes back with a $10,000 bright orange with blue sheared beaver coat. Would you wear this to sing the anthem? I said, sure. I mean, it sounds gauche, but it was gorgeous, sheared beaver. So I wore a $10,000 sheared beaver, orange and blue coat to sing the national anthem in, I think, at least one of those years.
So orange and blue, obviously, the colors of the Bears.
The colors. I think they thought maybe one of the Bears players' wives would buy it or see it. I mean, because it was to die for, honestly. Really, girls, trust me, it was.
But now you had to give it back. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. I go back to my opossum.
Well, and what Sandy was talking about, Ray, you were in Chicago for what, 15 years or so?
Right.
So were y'all there at the same
we
year?
We were good. Ray we were really great friends. He was on my show all the time. He was a regular because I just loved his commentary and the way he thought. Mm-hmm. And he'd come in and we would just talk about all kinds of stuff.
Now, Ray knew about this fur place. So my question, Ray, did you have a fur coat too?
No. I didn't have possum, squirrel, or shed paper.
Oh, boy.
Oh, we're about to drift off into the Beverly Hillbillies here, I think, some way or somehow. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Sandy, I wanted to get you to, on a more serious note, I wanted to get you to give your overview, if you will, or your take on the first year of the Trump presidency. It's hard to believe we're almost to the inauguration was almost a year ago now. I guess January 20th or right in there. It's usually the third week in January. Well, how do you grade out? I know that's a broad general question, but still on the issues that most concern us, I guess the life, freedom, values, issues, judges, those kinds of things. How do you grade out the president?
Well, I just think he's, I don't know if you want a letter grade, but I just think I'd say 8 out of 10, really. And when you consider the difficulties, the obstacles, the hatred mm-hmm. by the Never Trumpers, by the press, and losing, you know, being surrounded by, honestly, some terrible appointees, which I don't absolve him from that, but he was new. A lot of people that were just not serving him were betraying him, leaking all kinds of stuff. When you consider the hatred, I mean, it is pretty astonishing that he has prevailed. And I think more than that particular grade, which I think he's just really set his jaw and done some really fabulous things, including all the regulations he's turned back. Regulations that were killing people. You guys might remember the Gibson Guitar Factory. This is just one story mm-hmm. where this a SWAT team came in with guns yep. and raided the factory because they were using a certain kind of wood for a portion of the guitars, and it was outlawed. They were breaking an international law, not an American law, but an international law. I can't even remember whose law it was. And our American law enforcement went in and intimidated and destroyed, just did everything they could to destroy Gibson Guitar. And that's just one story. And that's because there were farmers who had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines on how they handled creeks on their property or little pools of water. People have no idea.
You're talking about back during the Obama administration.
Yes, and I'm talking about the reversal of those kinds of rules and regulations. Mm-hmm, yeah. Unbelievable. I think he's rolled back about a third already.
Mm-hmm. So that may explain the economy doing so well, too.
Oh, yes. But it's personal, too. It's just for people, just private citizens who are business owners. It was horrible, the things that were done to people. Yeah. If you think of more, people could probably relate to how the IRS was weaponized against a regular. Mm-hmm. I was with a couple of people yesterday who were both very successful and very have very high-paying jobs in very well-known companies who were involved in a tea party. And they were audited 2 years in a row, and they'd never been audited before in their lives, and they talked about how scary it was. Mm-hmm. So the abuses President Trump has, with Jeff Sessions and some of the other people he's appointed, Scott Pruitt, the EPA, they've turned back so many regulations, and people don't really comprehend what they've been saved from, honestly. So this is something, and this is something you can't measure, but I don't know if you saw President Trump's Christmas address with his wife Melania, but it was absolutely beautiful and moving. It was a tribute to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Trump's spiritual condition is, and I'm not going to boast of anything I don't know, or Melania. It's just my sense of things that there's been a change in both of them. Mm-hmm. And they have nothing to gain by talking overtly about Jesus' birth or Christ or God or, you know, certainly mm-hmm. when Trump was running for president, he didn't say anything like that. He used one scripture at Liberty one time, mm-hmm. 2 Corinthians, he said. But he never invoked God. He never showed humility. He seems to be a different man to me now. And Melania just seems tender about the things of God. So that to me is thrilling also.
Yeah, I noticed in the Christmas video you're talking about, Sandy, President Trump read directly from Isaiah scripture talking about the prophecy of the Messiah, of Jesus, the coming of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he read the entire context of it. in the video, which I don't think you would have gotten that for other from other administrations.
No.
Well, and you had Vice President Pence just a few weeks ago referring to President Trump as a believer. And Vice President Pence is an evangelical Christian, so he would not throw that word believer around lightly. Mm-hmm. But he referred to the president, and Pastor Robert Jeffress, First Baptist Dallas, has been in the Oval Office a number of times. Mm-hmm. And President Trump has asked for prayer. Mm-hmm. And there was a cabinet meeting just a few weeks ago where, with the media still in the room, he wanted to open with a time of prayer. That's unheard of.
And Dr. Ben Carson, who's one of his secretaries,
yes,
prayed in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
And you know, the thing that we have to emphasize again is that he has nothing to gain by doing this.
That's right.
He's not running now. Mm-hmm. And so I just think there's been a change. Now, we always, speaking as believers and just evaluating that apart from government and all of that, we know that the seed has to fall in fertile soil. We don't know what kind of soil. We don't know that we have no, I remember Mike Ditka became a Christian shortly before he came to, speaking of the Bears, before he came to Chicago, and people made a celebrity out of him in the Christian arena there. It was a mistake. Mm-hmm. They had him speaking and presenting when he was just a baby. I think he was saved through the ministry of Tom Landry, and he was not ready. And then he got caught driving drunk, and then the backlash against that. He was not mature. He was not ready for that. So I think it's a big mistake to make bold declarations about President Trump. But I see signs of a heart for God, and I see it in Melania. And I'm thrilled about that.
Amen. Sandy, do you know what you're going to be talking about in the morning?
I surely do. I'll be talking about Iran with Iranian expert Michael Adin. Michael's a historian and has been tracking. He knows all about Iran, going way back to the time of the hostages. And so he's going to be talking. He still has contacts inside the country, very knowledgeable. So we'll be discussing what's going on inside that we might not be hearing.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Sandy. Have a good day.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Okay, see ya.
Bye-bye. That's Sandy Rios joining us. Sandy's show is on each a weekday morning at 7:05 Central Time here on American Family Radio. You want to check out Sandy Rios in the morning. You're listening right now to the program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Speaking of shows, Walker, you have a new weekend program here, don't you?
I am. I have a new weekend program that'll debut here in the coming weeks, and it's called Exposing Washington. And the reason I came up with that name is we talk a lot about what's going on in our nation's capital on the show here, but we don't really have a lot of time to delve into the details and the key players behind all these news stories. So that's what I'm going to do on the weekend show. It's a 30-minute show, Exposing Washington. And I've already pre-recorded some, and just a few topics to kind of tease our minds here is I've talked about judicial overreach, got into the Constitution. What does it say about judicial overreach? What's the solution there? I talked about corruption at the Department of Justice and talked about the Russia investigation. And I'm going to record this week. This is going to be an interesting one. Can Christians vote for imperfect candidates? And because we have 2018 elections coming up, that seems to be a topic every election season.
Yep.
So Exposing Washington is the name of the show, so we'll be talking about
when are
Washington,
you going to debut?
Not sure. Sometime in the coming weeks. It'll be early January.
Don't you know people who can make that happen, though?
I do. I do. So maybe that person can make it happen.
Okay. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio, Tim with Walker. And Walker, we're still doing our Facebook page.
We are.
Like, everything working okay
we
there?
We are. We're live streaming on Facebook, and I've posted all the news stories there also.
All right, Fred, what do you got now?
Well, this is an election year, as Walker was just talking about, so I expect the campaigning. Well, it's already underway, I suppose, because they say here in America, you never stop doing election campaigns. But Robbie Mook, a former advisor to Hillary Clinton, was on CNN during the weekend, and it was like true confession time. He said the Democrats basically have to change their strategy. They've been drumming away on so-called Russian collusion. And basically what he said is that that's not resonating with the people out there. The people want to talk about the economy and things that directly relate to their lives. So cut number one there, Brent.
Don't think the Russia investigation is a winning message. You know, voters they watch and they look to see what your priorities seem to be. This is actually why the Republicans are looking to have a fight over immigration. They want to send a signal to voters. The Democrats are not focused on the voters. They're focused on immigration and that sort of thing. And obviously it's an important issue, but the Republicans see that as a helpful wedge for their base. So I think Democrats need to run on what everybody always needs to run on, which is what are you doing for the voters? What's in it for them?
So there you have it. That's a Democrat strategist, and he's not the first Democrat to do this, to say the Democratic Party has got to get their act together because what they are focusing on is not what the American people are interested in talking about, what hits their lives. I think the other thing that we saw just before Christmas there when tax reform finally got passed, the Democrats plan to go out there and demonize the tax reform plan. How do you do that? Because we know starting next month, February, people are going to start to see more in their take-home pay because that tax reform kicks in at that time. So what are you going to say to voters out there saying, we voted against tax reform, we don't want you getting that extra money in your paycheck? How is that going to resonate? And especially, you know, there are Democrat states out there where Donald Trump won big in 2016. There are Democratic senators, or over 20 of them are up for re-election. How do you go out there with a message that says I'm against tax reform when you're talking to people who are getting more in their take-home pay? How do you do that? How is that an election strategy? And then, as Robbie Mook was talking about there, immigration. You've got to deal with that. And Mark Gregorian was on with Sandy this morning. He's with the Center for Immigration Studies. And he was talking about and advising how Republicans need to deal with this whole issue of DACA. These are the young people who are illegal when they entered the country. They came in illegally. And he had some advice for the Republicans on this for an election year campaign.
This DACA issue does present a real opportunity, I think. It's a danger and an opportunity. The danger is that the president might cave, Congress will pass an amnesty. It won't be the full amnesty for everybody, but the DACA issue specifically is a subset. Those are the people who got work permits from Obama's illegal amnesty program for people who came before they turned 16. Amnestying just them, now I say just, it's 700,000 people, so it's not nothing, but it's still a relatively small share of the illegal population. If we get something substantial in return, like curbs on chain migration and E-Verify, then it would be worth it, frankly.
So there you have it. Mark Gregorian there of the Center for Immigration Studies is basically saying, okay, give the Democrats DACA, allow amnesty. Now, this is his suggestion. Allow amnesty for these young people who are in the country illegally, but on the same side, get something for it. Now, what Trump is saying over the weekend was, if you don't give me money for the border wall, you're not going to get DACA from me either. So this is going to be a big issue in the next couple of weeks to see how the president plays this.
Mm-hmm. Now, when are we going to vote on running out of money, Walker?
Oh, mid-January, I think.
Yeah.
The same old, everybody cries about the government going to shut down, and it never shuts down, rarely. Mm-hmm. And anyways, same old, same old.
Yeah.
They need to pass a one-year spending bill every 12 months.
Yeah.
Like companies do. Companies have to pass their budget once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The government needs to fund itself.
All right, Fred. Thanks for your contribution.
You bet.
We will return with Steve Jordahl. He'll be with us in a few minutes after the news. Tim, Walker, and Ray will return with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.